This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, we will speak with Hillary Noonan, a designer with a master's degree in landscape architecture and also a self-proclaimed science nerd. But first, I'm Natural E with your headline news. TheGuardian.com reports, ocean dead zones with zero oxygen have quadrupled in size since 1950, scientists have warned, while the number of very low oxygen sites near coasts have multiplied tenfold. Most sea creatures cannot survive in these zones, and current trends would lead to mass extinction in the long run, risking dire consequences for the hundreds of millions of people who depend on the sea. Climate change caused by fossil fuel burning is the cause of the large-scale deoxygenation, as warmer waters hold less oxygen. The coastal dead zones result from fertilizer and sewage running off the land and into the seas. The analysis published in the journal Science is the first comprehensive analysis of the areas. Warmer waters not only hold less oxygen, but also mean marine organisms have to breathe faster, using up oxygen more quickly. Microbes that proliferate at very low oxygen levels produce lots of nitrous oxide, a greenhouse gas that is 300 times more potent than carbon dioxide. For the first time in more than 40 years, the largest source of greenhouse gas pollution in the U.S. isn't electricity production, but transport. Cars, trucks, planes, trains, and shipping. Emissions data has placed transport as the new king of climate warming pollution at a time when the Trump administration is reviewing or tearing up regulations that would set tougher emissions standards for car and truck companies. Republicans in Congress are also pushing new fuel economy rules they say will lower costs for American drivers, but also weaken emission standards. This pollution can stunt lung growth, trigger asthma attacks, exacerbate heart disease, and cause developmental problems. The EPA estimates 17,000 schools across the U.S. are located next to roads with heavy traffic, with children from low-income and minority groups disproportionately put at risk. California is the only state in the U.S. to ban the construction of a school on the cheap land beside major highways. And finally, grist.org reports, a study published Thursday in Science by some of the world's top coral experts amounts to a last rites for the ecosystem often referred to as, quote, the tropical rainforests of the sea, end quote. Scientists surveyed 100 reefs around the world and found that extreme bleaching events that once occurred every 25 or 30 years now happen about every 5 or 6 years. The new study finds that 94% of the surveyed coral reefs have experienced a severe bleaching event since the 1980s. Only 6 sites surveyed were unaffected. They are scattered around the world, meaning no ocean basin on Earth has been entirely spared. The implications of this data in a warming world, taken together with other ongoing marine stressors like overfishing and pollution, are damning. Quote, it is clear already that we're going to lose most of the world's coral reefs, end quote, says study co-author Mark Eakin, coordinator of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Coral Reef Watch Program. He adds that by 2050, ocean temperatures will be warm enough to cause annual bleaching of 90% of the world's reefs. I don't know where the good news is today, so hopefully we can get into some happier topics. Hillary, I tried my best, you know, if you're listening to the news and thinking, wow, that was just so sad. I tried my best to, you know, I tried to find positive news stories, but these were the 3 top headlines that I found, and yeah, they're kind of a downer.
I went to a conference recently where we talked a lot about how to tell the story mm-hmm. of climate change.
Mm-hmm. Wait. Let me refresh our audience just because I did the news. This is Hillary Noonan.
Sorry, yeah.
Please tell us a little bit about yourself, and then please continue with where you
are. So Hillary Noonan, I'm a designer. I have a master's in landscape architecture. I was always the kid who took the Saturday science classes.
Mm-hmm.
And a mom and an artist mm-hmm. and lots of other things. What I'm really focused on at this point mm-hmm. is climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So I know we don't like to say lots of unhappy things, especially in Kansas City.
Hmm.
But we're worried that if we tell the truth about climate change, then people will just give up.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we talked about at a recent conference is that if you look at how campaigns in general to inform and change people's actions, how they have worked out in the past,
mm-hmm.
a really good one is USDA's effort to get people to eat more fruits and vegetables,
mm-hmm.
the whole five a day thing. They spent tens of millions of dollars and got absolutely zero improvement.
Wow.
In eating habits.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So
that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. But so let's learn from it.
Right. That's why we collect data too.
Exactly.
Yep.
So they were giving us facts.
Mm-hmm.
And they were giving us facts in all kinds of ways. They mm-hmm. were appealing to our logic and our reason.
Mm-hmm.
Very few things change what we do based on logic or reason.
I would agree.
From
personal experience.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you're honest with yourself,
right.
Most of us can come up with lots of examples.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to stop shying away from bad news
mm-hmm.
and say, oh my God, this sucks. But
right.
here's what we can do to improve it.
Right.
There are things we can do. Mm-hmm. There are things that we can do starting now.
But if I tell the truth on it, even if it's a downer, quote unquote, that is a fact. You know, that I mean, obviously I should be telling the facts, but I'm just saying that is, again, appealing to the logic. Trying to yes. appeal to the logic and reason, which is, you know, we just so.
Well, so you're reporting facts. Mm-hmm. Don't avoid that.
Right.
We need to hear the truth.
Right.
But that's not what's going to get people to change.
Yeah, that's my question to you.
So yeah. you have to get to the quote unquote gator brain. You have to get to that emotional side
mm-hmm.
of our brains. To give you an example of a way to do that that's totally impractical for what we're talking about, but mm-hmm. just to give you an idea to start thinking in that mode. During grad school, I had lots and lots of stress, and I started smoking again.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like smoking.
Mm-hmm.
It feels good. They're just, you know, it helps me chill out. Lots of things I like about it. So it's very hard to quit smoking, even though I know I need to.
Right.
So I bartered with a client who is a psychologist,
mm-hmm.
and he we went through a self-hypnosis session, and I've used it before for lots of other things, so I knew it would work well. So rather than telling, we talked about it ahead of time. He said, Hillary, you know, telling you all the bad things that are going to happen if you continue to smoke
mm-hmm.
isn't going to work.
Right.
And I know he's right. So he said, so what we're going to do is do something you really like. We're going to take a hike.
Mm.
And as I'm describing this hike, there are going to be two paths. And there's one path you really want to focus on and the other path you really don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so the path I don't want to focus on is the smoking. What
right.
I want to go toward is that thing that he described, this beautiful place in the woods,
right.
at the edge of the woods. He described the light coming through the leaves of the trees and all the insects. And
right. The beauty, the light pouring through. You might have said that.
Yes.
The fresh air, the animals, the birds.
The place I wanted to go to.
Right.
Somehow we have to figure out
uh-huh.
how to get that message across of there's a place we can go to.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And I was talking about that earlier today. I feel like I'm always talking about that, Hillary. It's not so much, I feel like it's not so much me getting a message across or anybody in particular getting a message across about where we need to go. I think it's about inspiring, being inspired, having a vision.
Yes.
You know, if you might be able to say you don't like what's happening right now. But if you have no vision of what you want for tomorrow, then we have nowhere to go.
Absolutely.
So we have to, what, okay, what don't we want? Okay, check, don't want that. What do we want?
Sure. I mean, that's the way we figure out who we are
mm-hmm.
in the world.
Well, the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking.
Yes. Well, but think about it in terms of, you know, us personally, each person becoming a person.
Absolutely.
You know, first we define who we aren't before we can figure it, before we can start zeroing in on who we want to be. So lots of people are in lots of different places. So all you can do is kind of put it out there and offer these visions and try to meet people where they are and get everybody going in that direction. You won't get everybody.
Right. And we don't, you don't need everybody, I guess. I don't know.
No, you don't. You know, we're human beings. You're not going to get everybody, and that's okay. If you tried to get everybody, not only would you be frustrated, but you would eventually become a dictator.
All right. Yeah. To sum it up, so, to be clear.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I like the philosophical, you know, kind of a spiritual angle on it. I like that. Let's take a turn here and talk about this, the conference that you went to recently.
So I've been to a couple of them. Mm-hmm. Both of them were excellent. The most recent one was the Soil and Nutrition Conference that the BioNutrient Food Association puts on at least once a year. Last year it was twice because we have to get them moving faster. So the conference is about growing food, but it's about growing food with full nutritional value.
Right.
I have a Brix press and a refractometer, and I can actually test my produce.
Hold on. You have a what?
A Brix press and a refractometer. This is the science nerd.
That sounds,
it's so
I
excited. Yeah. Oh, it's fun.
Tell
it really
me about
is
it.
Fun.
What is that?
Okay, so a Brix press, just to imagine vice grips with a couple of lips welded on the front of it so you can squish things and get liquid from them.
Okay.
Okay, you squeeze that liquid onto a little area of the refractometer. You flip a lid down and you look through it so you have sunlight coming through that liquid. And you're reading a bar graph on the inside. Well, anyhow, you're reading instrumentation on the inside that gives you a number.
Does the sun going through the liquid make, do you see the different?
So what you're seeing is dissolved solids. And so you would calibrate that refractometer according to what you were looking for. So if you're looking for sugar in grapes,
right,
which is usually when you hear about Brix, it's how wine growers know when to harvest the grape.
Okay.
By squeezing a grape, looking at it in a refractometer and seeing how much sugar. So my refractometer is calibrated for nutrient value. So actually, there are different, you can get a hard line, which isn't very good. You can get a fuzzy line, which is a lot better. But basically, what you want to get an idea of is the nutrient value in that food. I thought my refractometer was broken. You know, it was sent to me in the mail. And I kept getting really bad readings. And, you know, I'm buying all this stuff at the grocery store, sometimes at a farmer's market. I'm buying none. Like, I was testing at first. I would buy organic and non-organic and test both of them. Most of the produce I tested had really poor nutrient quality, including a lot of the organics.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Now, I did go out to Troke Farms out in Buckner. I was picking up organic fertilizer one day, and I ran over to their little farm market, and they had some peppers and things in the fridge that hadn't gone in their CSA, so I grabbed them, and I took them home, and I tested them, and wow. I mean, exactly what you want to see when you look through this refractometer. A nice fuzzy line. The middle of it was at a 14. It was like, holy smoke,
so
the refractometer
is
not broken. Taking care of the soil. Frank takes care of his soil when he's farming. It's not just macronutrients. You know, everybody talks about NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. Well, okay, those are three of the macros. There are more macros. There are lots of micros. I can never, I always forget to look it up. There's this whole thing about calcium and boron, and, you know, one of them is the road and the other is the truck and the, you know, all these things that you need to, first of all, in the soil, mm-hmm. to keep your biology going well, and then that nutrient, a lot of it is embodied in biology. Then the plants are able to access it because the biology makes it accessible for the plant. Then those things within the plant have to get to the level of second level metabolites and all these other things that have to happen in the plant. When that happens in the plant, and then you eat the plant mm-hmm. or the fruit from that plant, that then happens in your gut, or should,
mm-hmm.
Because you also have this whole biome in your gut that's going to do the same thing in your gut that happened in the soil, that happened in the plant, that then happens in your body. So if you don't have what you need in the soil, the plant can't get it. And if the plant can't get it, you're not going to get it from the plant.
Can't get what you don't have.
Yeah. And so things happen like, then you can't make the three different kinds of potassium or vitamin K mm-hmm. that your heart needs.
Okay, we gotta pull back a little bit because I can't take in all this information.
Yeah, I know. You know, sorry, like, and I just sail on this stuff. No. But think about Erica Garner.
Okay.
You know, she had asthma.
Mm-hmm.
She's living in the city. She has asthma. She had a heart attack.
Right.
I mean, was she even 30 years
no,
old?
No, she wasn't.
And she had a heart attack and died.
Right.
That never should have happened.
No.
For so many different reasons.
Right.
One of them is food.
I mean, I can think of some other things.
Yeah.
But
there are social systems, there are economic systems, there are all of these things that impact us. The way your body manages stress,
mm-hmm.
the way your body is resilient,
mm-hmm.
is by having good food.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see how you brought that back. Okay.
The poorer you are, the less likely you are to have good food.
Well, it sounds like you can have just enough too for that organic, and you still might not be getting it. That's what I just heard you say.
You could spend a lot of money on organics.
Okay, we gotta yep. Give me something good. Tell me something good.
So, if you have good biology, mm-hmm. and if you learn how to balance the nutrients in your soil,
mm-hmm.
most of the time your soil doesn't need much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot of nutrient
here
in the
city.
In the city, it all depends on what it's been through.
Right. Because I know when they like build and then you remove the topsoil, and that takes, I don't know how many years for the earth to do what it does to make it really rich.
Right. And topsoil is only topsoil until you dig it up.
Right. So nothing. I mean, how much is untouched?
Number one, do not buy topsoil if you want to grow your food, your own food.
Okay.
No point. You're wasting your money.
Because there's no such thing. Unless
it was topsoil where it was.
Okay.
The minute it got dug up, you've destroyed your biology, then your nutrients leach. So you've just bought dirt.
Okay. Let's be real. You bought dirt.
Yeah. So you need organic material.
Mm-hmm.
But most
of us aren't growing our own food, Hillary.
No, it's true.
So, I mean,
So.
Well, on that, hold up. On that note, let's take a break really quick.
Okay.
And then we'll jump right back in.
Sure.
If you have a car, boat, or truck you no longer need, you can donate it to KKFI, which helps your favorite radio station and gets you a tax deduction. Call Bill at 816-994-7869.
What's that sound, you ask? It's the sound of one-time-use trash. People get bottled water because of hydration, convenience, and the claim of better taste and quality. Truth is, there's usually no difference between bottled and tap water. The healthier choice is to get a cool, reusable bottle made of lined aluminum, steel, glass, or special plastic that won't break off chemical bits like the plastic used in disposable bottles. Get healthy and keep your world from becoming a big junk pile. Disposables dead. Brought to you by J.C. Herman High School and 90.1 FM KKFI.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazarowitz, and this is Climate Connections. It's an hour before the puck drops at a Blackhawks hockey game at the United Center in Chicago. Cars are jockeying for parking spots, and fans sporting red jerseys stream into the arena. On their way, they may pass a few premium parking spaces that double as charging stations for electric vehicles.
So if you're an electric car driver and you go to the United Center, you can use these stations entirely free of cost.
Scott Mercer is CEO of Volta, the company that owns the stations. In addition to the four at the United Center, Volta's deployed about 60 more around Chicago and networks in several other cities. Ads are displayed at each station, providing revenue that keeps the charging free for drivers and parking lot owners. Volta targets high-visibility locations to get people's eyes both on the ads and the charging stations themselves. Ultimately, the goal is to spark more interest in electric vehicles.
People who just see Volta charging stations are more likely to consider buying EVs the next time they look for a new car.
More people driving electric vehicles means less carbon pollution and more demand for charging locations. It's a win for EV owners and the Earth. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
All right, everybody. You are listening to 90.1 KKFI. I'm in studio. This is Naturally. I'm in studio with Hillary Noonan. She's a designer with a master's degree in landscape architecture and a science nerd and knows all about soil. And if you want to call in and join our conversation, you're welcome to do so. 931-5534, 816-931-5534. Okay. Now, what group were you talking about was coming up with what?
The Bionutrient Food Association. I love these people. They're very much open source people. They're not trying to corner the market on anything. Mm-hmm. They just know that we need this information and they want to get it out there. So at the conference, we...
What was this conference? I don't think we said the name. Or yes, you did. Sorry.
Yeah, Soil and Nutrition
That's
Conference.
Right. You said that. Where was it?
A little town in Massachusetts.
Okay.
Near Sturbridge Village okay. for, yeah.
East Coast.
East Coast. So they are working on a gizmo, which mm-hmm. we will have sometime in the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. The gizmo you will be able to take with you when you go grocery shopping, mm-hmm. wherever that is. And you can point it at produce and take a reading, just point and shoot, mm-hmm. And it will give you an idea of the nutrient value of that produce. So you can go in, and they've got 10 kinds of apples.
Right.
You can look at each of those 10 kinds of apples and go, oh, this is the one with the most nutrient value. Mm-hmm. That will have a profound effect on growers.
So I was going to ask you, is this going to be for consumers or who? And so it is for consumers.
It is for consumers. And so I want to be talking to farmers
right.
In our area because I want them to be ready.
Exactly.
So that they have the produce that people want to buy.
Right. So how do you see this making a shift? And
Because if people look at produce and go, oh, yeah, it looks great, but like those little carrots...
Baby carrots?
Organic, yeah, little baby organic carrots.
You know how they process those?
Well, and they have no nutrient value. I mean, zero. Yeah. Zip.
Yeah. They got a crunch, though.
They've got a crunch. You know, it's...
just kidding.
It's
I like my carrots with dirt on them.
Yeah, it's the Cool Whip without the sugar. Yeah, really just not worth buying.
No, but go back. So how is this in the hands of consumers going to change?
So when consumers see the carrots with dirt on them and then they see those neat little carrots in the plastic bag mm-hmm. and they point and shoot mm-hmm. and the neat little carrots in the plastic bag get a mm-hmm. zero mm-hmm. and the carrots with dirt on them get a 14.
What's the range that we're looking for? I guess this is different because you use something that shows a line, not numbers.
So I'm not sure exactly what the reading right. will be on the gizmo, and we haven't decided on a name, so we're all just calling it the gizmo.
Okay.
But there's some really wonderful brilliant people working on it. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's going to be a digital readout, but I don't know that for sure. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, different fruits and vegetables, you want to get to different numbers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But generally,
that's a detail,
12
but...
to 14, yeah. And they're talking about exactly which things they need, which things they can pick up as megahertz mm-hmm. readings,
right.
Which we won't get further into that. But
but it sounds like, I feel like if I had this gizmo and I was at the store and I was checking out all the fruits and vegetables that I, first of all, pointed at a box, that's hilarious. You know what I'm saying? In the packaged aisle, you know what I mean? Or in the frozen
yes.
aisle. That's funny to me to think about. What's the nutritional value? And the, it's like, cannot compute. But
exactly.
Anyways, that's not funny at all. Like, people, we're doing what we got to do to survive. But as far as if I'm out there at the grocery store with this gizmo, I'm a bit of a nerd, you know, and I think that'd be cool. But I think it would be cool until I feel like I would be like, a little bit scared, like, well, what have I been eating all these years? And then a little bit angry, like, I have no option here. Do we have a caller, Mike? All right, why don't we go ahead and bring the caller on the air. Caller, please say,
yeah, good evening.
What's your name and where are you calling from? What part of the city?
My name is Ron. I'm calling from downtown.
Hey, Ron.
You were talking a little earlier, and you talked about a woman who had a heart attack and died.
Yeah.
And she implied that the food might have had something to do.
Maybe a little something, yeah.
I would, yeah, please explain and further explain what you meant by that.
Sure. The food that you eat needs to have enough nutrient that your body can make the vitamins and all the other things that you need to keep your body going. When you don't have it,
mm-hmm.
You just get weaker. It's easier for things to affect you. If you're eating sugars all the time, things that don't have a lot of other nutrient value, you know you're probably going to end up as a type 2 diabetic, right? So right. It's kind of like that, but...
So you're saying that the value, the nutritional value of her food was deficient?
Yes. I will
and
bet you anything.
Could have been one of the contributing factors to having a heart attack.
Absolutely.
You couldn't conclusively say that's why she died, though, right?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
But I
okay.
will bet you anything.
That's what I want a clarification on.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know Erica Garner. But I know a little bit just from the news about where she lived and how Eric Garner tried to provide for his family, the passion he had for his family, but it's very, very difficult to get the food that actually will nourish your body.
Right.
So lots of us have lots of illnesses that we really shouldn't have because our bodies can't make the things that we need, and that's because of the food we're eating.
It's deficient.
Yep.
And that goes back to agriculture and the farmers and how they treat the soil.
Right.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much.
So thank you
Appreciate
for calling.
You.
Thank you, Ron.
All right.
See, I don't want to think of this issue as like, oh, here's another issue that we got to worry about. Because I feel like I can see that perspective forming, you know, if I was listening. But here's my thing. I don't think this is another issue for us to worry about. I just think this is just another symptom of the same problem, of
yes.
the one problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah. for me, food should be joyful.
Mm-hmm.
I like cooking for people. I like eating meals with people.
Mm-hmm.
Food should be a joyful thing as well as, you know.
I mean, I just feel like there's so many of us who work, you know, 40, 50, 60, however many hours a week, you know?
Yep.
And I feel like we're putting these really stressful lives, these really stressful situations in order to provide.
Yep.
And then there's no time, you know? And so I feel like, I don't know, capitalism is an issue, but I do want to get back to this gizmo. I'm sorry, I keep bringing it back to here, but I want to say how I think it can affect some change. And I think, first, it would be like a wake-up call, but then also I just feel like it's just going to make people angry. Like, I'm in here, I'm trying to spend my hard-earned dollar on food that I think is good for me, and there's actually nothing in it, and now I'm angry. So maybe, you know, sometimes anger can propel people to...
You know, that's a way of getting to the gator brain.
What is this gator brain?
That is your emotional side. That is the side that says, I know it's rational to do this, but I want that. Mm-hmm. And anger is a way of getting there. It's actually maybe the easiest, fastest way to get there. When people want something good, change will happen. Mm-hmm. Right now, we don't know what we want. Like, we know some of the things we want. Mm-hmm. We don't even know how to affect them. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's so tangled up. But food doesn't necessarily need to be like that. So if the only way you have of buying food is going to a grocery store, then, of course, you want to talk to the people running the grocery store. But you know what?
I highly doubt they're going to know anything about the soil.
No, they won't. But there are going to be people like me. Mm-hmm. And I figure what I really need to be doing at this point is teaching more people. Mm-hmm. So there can be lots of us who know enough that we can talk to farmers. We can go to our grocery stores and talk to the managers of the grocery stores. We can start a co-op in our neighborhood.
That's my dream right there.
Yeah.
That's really my dream.
You know, when somebody down the street grows really great tomatoes, you've got too much shade, but you could grow something else. And another person down the street is growing another thing. We really could be doing that. It's not that hard.
It is kind of hard, though. I mean, that'd be like a huge change from where we're at right now.
It's a big change, but it's a change that's already happening. So Ivanhoe neighborhood, they have a farmer's market. They've had a farmer's market for, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years. And they're making the change happen. You know, somebody who's there, who's helping people understand how to grow food, people who maybe did it as a child with their parents or their grandparents, but they don't remember how to do it. So I want to be teaching those things.
And you're right. There are a lot of grassroots efforts in the city. I was just trying to poke you. Get you to say something, you know. But there's a whole bunch of local food growers.
You know, there is a daycare center on Paseo at maybe 54th. They started growing. They have like an extra lot to the side of the house where the daycare center is, and they started growing vegetables there. And now they sell the vegetables in their own farmer's market there on the corner. They even take food stamps.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's, I think, a mom and daughters who started this daycare center, and now they're selling.
Do the kids there eat it?
Yeah.
They feed the kids there. That's good.
Yep.
Yeah, I visited just before here. I was at East High School visiting with Kansas City Aquaponics, and I was in this greenhouse, and there's the aquaponics going. You go outside, there's raised beds. Obviously, the ground's frozen right now, but this is on school grounds.
Yep.
And I'm just like blown away. You know, it's just incredible that these students are getting this this training. I had my first community garden last year. Okay, I'd never planted anything in my entire life, okay? And I'm grown. And it was last year or 2 years ago that I had my first community garden, thanks to Mike Murphy over here in St. Paul's Episcopal Church up the street. And so, yeah, it was an incredible experience. I got food from it. I thought, this is my first time. It's never going to work. I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. It's going to not work. But, you know, and so, and it was empowering. It was just That's just awesome to be able to eat what you grow. So the fact that these students are getting that in school, you know, I just hope it'd be cool to have one of them on the air, and I hope it's inspiring them, and, you know, that's the future right there.
Oh, there is a fifth grade teacher in the Bronx who started growing some hydroponic food with his class. They got so excited. Mm-hmm. It has turned into this huge and wonderful thing. He does a TED Talk, and of course, I can't remember his name, but he's a fifth grade school teacher from the Bronx. He's so fifth grade school teacher. Mm-hmm. He stands there and, you know, he can't stand still. He's so like his students. You can see how the students connect with this guy. He's wonderful. And his students have now, like, gone through high school, and some of them are on into college. They started a business with the high school students who had learned all this stuff about growing, and they started installing green roofs. I mean, it has just grown and grown and grown.
We got to get some young people on here.
Absolutely.
You know? We got to get some young people on here and give them that platform, you know, talk to us adults. We're hard-headed and not really wanting to change.
I look at my kids and I try not to get upset when they're stubborn, because I was really stubborn, and that got me through some very hard times. So, yeah, I love those things about kids, that all the kids who question everything. That's certainly how I was. I, you know, people would get mad because I kept putting my hand up to ask questions. They're like, we want the class to end. Shut up. And I kept asking for more explanations.
Yep. Well, keep asking. And keep searching.
Yes.
I got another one for you. Is there going to be a permaculture class here in the Kansas City area that people could attend? And first of all, what is permaculture?
So permaculture is a combination of the words permanent and agriculture. I have a certification in permaculture. I've heard about classes somewhere north of Lawrence.
Yes.
I think you can probably find them on Facebook, maybe.
I can post them. I was just looking at them. I was going to try to take it, but I can't.
Well, so, and I'm going to have some classes starting toward the end of the month, this month, January. It's not going to be strictly permaculture. When I got my certification in permaculture, I was really frustrated because it wasn't really science-based the way I was taught. And so they talk about things like plant guilds. And if you Google plant guilds, you will find one list that says, absolutely grow these plants together, and another list that says, never grow those plants together. Because people have had success with both. And so you need to get out of that story realm. I love a good story, but to replicate something, I need science. So in looking for the science behind that, that's how I got into soil microbiology. And once you get that, then it starts to make sense why some plants grow well together and others don't.
So in the class, would you cover that type of soil health?
Absolutely. We'll start with sort of an overview. And so the people who have some experience might want to come to the overview, but might not need some of the other more basic things. But I want to start with some fairly basic things so that people who haven't ever grown have a place to start.
Right.
Then we can keep going and get as complicated as folks want to.
So if someone was going to take this class, would it be so they could, would it be for someone who's like already working at like a small growing farm, or would it be someone who wants to maybe get a community garden plot for the first time, or someone who's about to put some raised beds in their backyard?
Yeah, I want to meet people where they are. So starting with basics so that people who haven't grown something before know that you start with A and go to B and go to C, and you know, this is how you get started. If you're not careful, it's just a whole lot of spaghetti thrown at the wall.
Okay. Before we get that spaghetti, Too messy. We're going to take a break real quick.
Okay.
I'm Liz Jeans with The Healing Touch, and I am a new underwriter for KKFI. The reason I'm doing that now is because our world is a little odd, and all I can answer is I have to keep an open mind, an open heart. I have to think globally. I have to act locally. KKFI was my answer. They address so many issues that are so important, speak of them intelligently, and the music variety and diversity is what makes our world great. For these reasons, I hope you choose to support KKFI and any way that you can. Thank you so much. For more information, please go to kkfi.org.
For 30 years, KKFI has been supported by listeners just like you. Thank you for being there for us so we can be there for you. To help sustain independent community radio, go to kkfi.org and click donate.
Farmers put covers on their fields, but don't let them sleep. On this CurrentCast. You might think soil could use a rest between growing seasons, but leaving soil bare through winter makes it vulnerable to heavy rain and winds that cause erosion and wash nutrients out of the soil. Enter cover crops, which are grown between seasons to enrich soil and protect water.
When you have cover crops, they increase the infiltration rate of the water into the soil.
That's James Horman of Ohio State University Extension. He says cover crops prevent runoff that carries polluting nutrients, sediments, and pesticides into rivers and lakes. And on top of those benefits, farmers who have embraced cover crops are seeing improved soil quality and yields, too. CurrentCast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
So we're here with Hillary Noonan, and Hillary, I just wanted to ask, so you're involved in a lot of different things, like with your master's in landscape architecture and your knowledge about soil health, but it's really kind of, isn't soil at the base, the foundation of all the things that you do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The thing that gets me up in the morning is soil, mm-hmm. because I know that the most constructive thing I can do about climate change is taking care of soil. The same thing that sequesters CO2 in the soil is the same thing that will make our farms more resilient, which is the same thing that gets full nutrient value into our food.
Well, that sounds incredible.
Yeah. And it's not that hard, and it's not expensive.
Is the same thing, what is that quote-unquote same thing? Is that a specific nutrient in the soil? Is it a specific way to take care of the soil?
It is the dynamic system that soil should be.
Okay. So is there a way to get back to that?
Absolutely.
Oh.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's my good news.
Yes.
There's my good news.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we have lots of soil that isn't storing CO2. If we got all of the soil that we could get to storing CO2, we could change climate change so quickly your head would swim.
Are you kidding me? Just
I'm
with the
not
soil?
Kidding.
Okay,
yep.
We don't have much time left, but tell me what that looks like. Getting the soil back to health. First of all, how did it get out of health? And then tell me how to get it back to health, if you can, quickly.
Where the Garden of Eden used to be.
Do I know where?
Yeah.
I guess it would be Earth. I don't know.
Well, yes, but it was what is now a desert in Iraq and Iran. Right?
Okay.
So that desert. Because farming does a lot of damage to soil.
So the way we're farming is responsible for the lack of nutrition in our soil.
Yes.
The big agriculture.
But also because after World War II, we started using nitrate as fertilizer.
Right.
Because the companies that made bombs had all this leftover nitrate.
See, that slick type stuff just really, we got this left. Let's use it for this. Really?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, because we had this very, we put science into silos.
Okay, so wait, let's not go too far down that road. Okay,
yeah,
so farming, you know, trying to use up these resources that we had created, now our soil is depleted. And now that it's depleted, not only are we not getting the nutrition we need, but it's not soaking up the CO2 that could be helping us stave off this climate change.
Right.
So it's messed up. How can we get it back to its health?
We can do it. organic matter.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Organic matter. That's a little bit of a rabbit hole.
Okay.
Basically, let's just say compost.
Okay.
Not all of compost is organic material, but it's where it's your best source.
Okay. But is compost going to have good nutrients if the food I'm composting didn't have nutrients to begin with?
Well,
that's terrible.
Well, it's also, you know, is there residual stuff on the outside of it? So if you're composting really well, those things aren't as big a problem.
Okay, so compost can help.
Yep, compost can help. And then replenishing, giving your soil a jump start with biology. And so maybe it's just making sure that your compost has a full complement of biology. Mm-hmm. Most compost doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Is this something that we can do? Is this something Big Ag, if they were like, hey, we want to do the right thing, like, could they do this? Or is this something that has to be done smaller scale?
No. Actually, the Land Institute is having pretty good success with getting farmers to stop tilling. Hmm. So no-till really helps. It still doesn't get your biology back there.
Mm-hmm.
It is something we can do. It's something Big Ag can do. Mm-hmm. It's something, even if you don't want to grow food, if you just want to have a pretty garden, that's okay. It's food for the soul.
Right. Look at you.
And you can be storing CO2 with it.
Okay, that's beautiful. See, I like that. Ending on a happy note. We still got a few more minutes, though.
So permanent agriculture. Okay, so imagine this. There is a garden in Vietnam. This is in a movie, I think, by Jeff Lawton from Australia. There is a garden in Vietnam that the same family has been gardening for 300 years.
Oh, my God.
Now, they do almost nothing to this garden because of the way they've put it together and because it's healthy. They clearly are not doing it the way we teach people to garden or farm. And so they have very little maintenance on their garden, and they get all of their food from it. Think about an oasis.
Okay.
Why does an oasis work? I mean, it's out in the middle of the desert. So those plants in the oasis have different depths of roots. The roots that go down the deepest are getting to water. And when those top soil horizons dry out, that plant will actually pull water up and water the things in
the
higher.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Plants don't just take stuff up. They also exude liquid into the soils. So it's much more of a dynamic system than what we're taught.
So it's a mixture of like composting and like variety, biodiversity.
Don't use synthetic fertilizers. Synthetic nitrogen will wipe out the entire kingdom of fungi in your soil.
Ooh,
yeah.
That doesn't sound good.
It's not good because that fungi is essential. And so I don't know if you've ever taken a ceramics class and you throw a pot, you know, you throw the clay onto this wheel and you have to get your thumb right in the middle and then you pull it up. And if it doesn't come out well, it just starts wobbling and wobbling and wobbling and wobbling. And that's what happens to a dynamic system when you screw it up.
Okay.
So if you kill off one entire kingdom that is a part of it, the rest of the system starts wobbling, and pretty soon things die off. Your nutrient leaches because your nutrient was embodied in those things when they are alive.
Right.
And when they die, they're gone.
So now I'm thinking about the ocean, the bad news I just reported. And now I'm back to where I started.
We could change that.
But we can change that.
We can change
that with the soil.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Very quickly.
Okay. So thank you so much. We've been chatting with Hillary Noonan, designer with a master's degree in landscape architecture, science nerd. She has her certification in permaculture design. Is it?
Yes.
Permaculture design. And she's going to be having a permaculture course available here soon. We will put the details on our Facebook page and announce it on air as soon as we have more details on that. Thank you so much for joining me this evening.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, everybody, this is Natural E. I'm going to have a few events for you. The Great Plains Growers Conference is January 11th through the 13th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Learn about growing organic fruit trees, vegetables, cover crops, and raising honeybees at the annual Great Plains Growers Conference. It's a three-day conference in combination of the Plains Vegetable Conference and the Mid-America Fruit Conference. It will be held January 11th to 13th at the Fulkerson Conference Center at Missouri Western State University in St. Joe, Missouri. For more information and to register, please visit our Eco Radio Facebook page. Net Zero Energy House Workshop, January 13th from 10 a.m. to noon. Join the designer, builder, and homeowners of a net zero energy house at this free on-site Heartland Renewable Energy Society workshop. It will be held at the home of John and Leanne Luters from 10 a.m. to noon, Saturday, January 13th, and it's in Weatherby Lake, Missouri. The workshop is free, but they would like for you to register if you would like to attend by sending an email to info@heartlandrenewable.org. On Martin Luther King Jr. Day, there will be a nature walk, so that's January 15th from 1 to 4 p.m. The Heartland Conservation Alliance will host a Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. nature walk. It's a 1.8-mile walk it'll begin at MLK Jr. Square Park, which is located at 1800 Swope Parkway. It'll wind along Brush Creek Parkway to the Bruce R. Watkins Cultural Center. Organizers call the event a restorative walk to enjoy the company of others and the stillness of nature as we reflect on the work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You can find out more information by visiting heartlandconservationalliance.org. That's all I got for you this evening. Mike, do you have anything else for the audience?
I think that's all we have for this week. We're going to go out as we like to with This Week in Water.
Republicans say no to Trump's drilling plans. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin. And it's This Week in Water.
A massive winter storm hit the U.S. East Coast last week, bringing freezing temperatures and snow from Florida to Maine.
The storm was a result of a bomb cyclone, or bomb genesis, which NOAA describes as a storm that intensifies as the barometric pressure drops rapidly over 24 hours. And in this case, a cold air mass from the north collided with warmer ocean waters. Typically, the frigid air is locked around the North Pole, but the pattern broke and the cold air headed south.
According to the Associated Press. The reason for this is hotly debated. Jason Furtado of the University of Oklahoma said that it is probably a mixture of human-caused climate change and natural variability. He added that global warming has not made the polar pattern more extreme, but has made it seem more severe due to its movement.
While the central and eastern U.S. have been very cold, the rest of the planet was almost 1 degree Fahrenheit warmer than normal last week, and the Arctic was more than 6 degrees higher.
On Tuesday, the temperature in Anchorage, Alaska, reached 48 degrees, while it was 19 in Boston. The first weeks of December last year were the second warmest ever in Fairbanks, with temperatures 20 degrees above average.
Dry weather in the western U.S. is raising concerns about drought along the Colorado River Basin and other areas. Snowpack, which supplies much of the runoff to fill reservoirs, is very low.
For December, snowfall was 20% below average in some areas, according to the Associated Press, and last Thursday, the total snowpack was only 65% of normal. These numbers have led to some dire predictions for the Colorado River, which supplies about 40 million people with water.
Runoff in the basin this spring may only be about 55% of average, and the low snowpack could affect other river basins that flow east out of Colorado, including the Arkansas and the South Platte.
Brian DeMonacos of the Natural Resources Conservation Service told the Denver Post that the area still has more than half of the snow season remaining, and conditions could change, but it is unlikely to make up for the current deficit.
The Trump administration announced last week that it's going to allow oil and gas drilling in almost all U.S. coastal regions, including the Arctic, Atlantic, and Pacific Oceans, as well as the Gulf of Mexico.
Many of those waters had been protected for a long time, and some were recently set aside by President Obama. E&E News reports that Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke said that the move was a start to looking at American energy dominance.
He added that opening up the massive areas to drilling will deepen his department's commitment to environmental stewardship because they do it right.
There was swift reaction, not just from environmental groups, but even from some in Trump's own party. A spokesman for Maryland Republican Governor Larry Hogan told the Washington Post that the governor has instructed his attorney general to take any legal action necessary to prevent the exploration.
Republican Governors Chris Christie of New Jersey and Rick Scott of Florida are also opposed, and the Democratic governor of North Carolina said the move was a critical threat to the state's economy.
Governor Jerry Brown, Democrat of California, said in a statement that his state would do whatever it takes to stop what he called a reckless and short-sighted action.
Zinke said the plans were just a draft and that states would have a say in the final decision.
And in related news, Zinke has recommended to the president that the size of three marine monuments, one in the Atlantic and two in the Pacific, be downsized or at least opened up to commercial fishing.
The monuments harbor unique species and are a wealth of biodiversity, according to Jane Lubchenco, a past administrator of NOAA. She told The Guardian that there are plenty of other places to fish in the ocean other than these protected areas.
The three marine monuments currently comprise areas more than three times the size of California.
In a surprising move, the Brazilian government announced last week that it's going to stop building large hydroelectric dams in the Amazon basin.
Brazil gets about 70% of its electricity from hydropower, and mega dams were being planned in the Amazon. There was much opposition from indigenous peoples and social movements, prompting large anti-government demonstrations.
Paulo Pedrosa of the Ministry of Mines and Energy told O Globo newspaper that the government has to respect the views of society, which has reservations about these big projects.
But Manga Bay News reports that there may be other reasons for the government's policy change, including a decrease in political influence of large construction companies, which is likely caused by corruption scandals and a decline in Brazil's economy.
And finally, there have been health trends over the years that promote natural over processed foods, claiming they preserve vitamins and nutrients, contain enzymes that make them easier to digest, and are free of dangerous toxins.
But as the New York Times reported, there's a new trend in San Francisco that has health experts worried. Say hello to raw water. Unfiltered, untreated, unsterilized spring water. It's so popular with health-conscious Bay Area consumers that one brand, Live Water, selling for nearly $37 for 2.5 gallons, is often sold out.
Supporters distrust tap water, partly because of added fluoride as well as concerns about lead pipes, but they also contend that water treatment removes beneficial minerals and healthful bacteria, something they call water probiotics.
But the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the EPA, and various health departments caution they could also be getting a mouthful of farm waste runoff, septic tank spillover, chemicals, and pesticides.
While water systems in the U.S. have had issues with crumbling infrastructure and ongoing risks of lead leaching from pipes, all in all, says David Jones of Harvard Medical School, we have an incredibly safe and reliable water supply. And he added, treatment is likely responsible for increasing life expectancy during the 20th century by 30 years.
Observers hope that the raw water movement will be a passing fad, and instead, money will be spent not on pricey trends, but on safer water and infrastructure for all.
This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association, bringing together the best and brightest minds in the water sector at ACE 18. Learn more at awwa.org/ACE18.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC. On 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
You're listening.